You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
All right, welcome back. You're watching The Flavor Show. All my beautiful guests, those three people that watch me every week, I'm so glad to have you again. My name is Master Zen. I'm here with my co-host, Tashia Pope.
Hi.
And we have a very, very special guest in the place today, the Honorable Cynthia Miller, judge extraordinaire, somebody who I've known for a little while now.
Wow.
I can say
yes.
So is NAACP, is that where I met you?
Yes, indeed.
The youth committee.
Yes, indeed.
And now we're well out of the youth range, but still standing here. So how you doing today, Judge?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate both of you for having me till you're here today.
Yes, for sure. And we Black will be here whenever Black comes, but we're going to just go keep this going. So glad to have you here. I know you're doing a lot of things in the city and have been for a long time. So, I mean, those people, those three people watching, they just might not know. So I'm just give you an opportunity to tell what's going on, what you have doing in your courtroom and in all the other things that you're All right.
Well, first of all, I just want to thank you all again for having me join you here
our
today.
Mm-hmm.
I love the studio. This is so cool. And to folks out there in the podcast land who may be watching today, I would just want to tell you a little bit about me. I've been serving you at the 36 Sister Court since 2006. Mm. It's been almost 13 years now. It seems amazing. It's flown by. I am currently on the felony docket, so I hear the felonies at the preliminary exam stage, and then I also take pleas on felonies. I don't do the sentencing. Those go over to the Third Circuit Court, but we do take the pleas now at the 36th District Court. And in the time that I've been on the court, the most exciting thing that I've been involved in is I am one of the founders, and I'm currently the presiding judge of the 36th District Court's homeless court program.
Okay. Ooh.
And it's called Street Outreach Court Detroit. Mm-hmm. Street Outreach Court Detroit has a website. It's www.streetdemocracy.org/SOCD for Street Outreach Court Detroit. This program is exciting, and it always makes me thrilled to talk about it because we've been able to, in the time we've been existing, which was since 2012, we've been able to put 97% of our folks, 6 months after graduation, 97% of them are still in stable housing, 91% are still in stable jobs, none of them go back and commit new misdemeanors or felonies. So they're completely turning their lives around.
Right.
That recidivism rate of 0% is the lowest I've ever heard of for any specialty court program anywhere. And 3 years later, those numbers hold up. 3 years later, our recidivism rate is only at 10%.
Okay.
And the average specialty court program in the state is about 30, 40, 50%.
Wow. That's
so
good.
It's a huge, huge difference.
So can you explain that a little bit for those who might not, you know? Sure.
Yeah. So when we're talking about recidivism, we're talking about people who go back and reoffend.
Right.
They commit new misdemeanors. And misdemeanors are things like the criminal misdemeanors are things like driving while intoxicated, having marijuana on you, entering somebody's house without the owner's permission, being drunk in public, of course, domestic violence, things of that nature as well. But also the felonies, of course, are your higher level offenses that we always see on TV, rape, robbery, murder, carjacking, kidnapping, all of that. So our folks aren't doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're becoming self-sufficient and they're becoming citizens who are contributing to society again, which is what we want, you know.
That's right.
And what is wonderful is that in this program, we have a lot of partners. We have Wayne County Sheriff, Wayne County Prosecutor, the City of Detroit Law Department, the City of Detroit Parking Department, a lot of different people who are partners in this program from the government and then also from the community in Capuchin Soup Kitchen, St. Leo Soup Kitchen, Neighborhood Legal Services, Volunteers of America, Share House, etc.
Okay.
And it was founded by the team from the court, with me, as well as Street Democracy and Detroit Action Commonwealth. And what's cool about Detroit Action Commonwealth is that that is an organization that's comprised of people who were homeless mm-hmm. or are homeless at this time.
Okay.
And they're the ones that led the charge back in about 2010 or so, the Ban the Box, mm-hmm. where they were talking about, you know, the city of Detroit needing to remove that box off their job application okay. forms that said, do you have a prior conviction?
Sure.
Exactly.
Sure.
And they were successful with that. So they're a serious community advocacy group. And okay. I'm just really honored to work with them on this program.
So I have a question. I currently am in school working on my master's in clinical mental health.
Wonderful.
So a lot of the things that we're going to is conditioning the person to find out what the problem, the cause, result is, and helping them fix that.
Yep.
Are there programs in place to help these people in that regard, or
Absolutely.
They're just doing it basically on their own, just realizing, hey, enough is enough. It's time for me to change my footing, being
Great
around positive.
Question. Great mm-hmm. question. First off, and best wishes in your program.
Thank you.
I'm proud of you. I'm a former social worker, so
okay.
I definitely know and get it. Let me tell you, what happens is the community service agencies assign a case manager.
Okay.
So the person comes in, let's just say it's me, right? I walk in the door and I'm drug addicted, alcohol addicted. I have no home of my own. My children have been separated from me because of my addiction problems, and I'm basically couch surfing. I stay at mom's house tonight, Bae's house the next night, auntie's right. house the next night, back to Bae's house or whatever,
right?
And so that's the type of typical situation we might see. Mm-hmm. When I come in with those problems, the agencies develop what we call an action plan. Mm-hmm. And so that action plan is a 90-day plan that we will serve to work with you to make certain that we can build you up and
Excuse
get you
me, here's Black,
so. Back to self-sufficiency. Hey, Brother Black, how are you?
Sorry about the interruption, but you know, Black likes to come late every week, so this is his entrance.
This is his entrance. How y'all doing?
Hello. So with the program, we're talking about Street Outreach Court Detroit, which is a homeless court program that I run at 36, along with my colleagues, Judge Hennett Johnson and Judge Larry Williams. And the way that it works is once we create this 90-day action plan, then we say to a person who presented with my problems, okay, you're going to go to Michigan Works and work mm-hmm. with them on the job situation, the GED program. You're going to go over here for mental health treatment if you need it. You're going to go over here for drug addiction treatment. You're going to have to report to NA and AA and bring back your proof of that work that you're doing in that. You're going to have to be tested. In terms of the child separation issues, we're going to send you to some parenting classes, mm-hmm. whatever it is that I need to help me to address all those problems I came in with. And then we give them 90 days to work with our case managers and to work on themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And if at the end of 90 days they need some more time, we'll extend that.
Right.
If they're ready to go forward, they go forward. If they are able to go forward at that point, then what's beautiful is they then get to see me or one of my colleagues, and we are able to grant them relief. That relief is we wipe every single ticket they have at 36 District Court
wow.
to nothing
wow.
other than $30 for their That's Secretary of State fee, and we can't waive it.
Right.
So that's huge.
Right.
I mean, that somebody can have $10,000 in tickets
sure.
and end up with, you know,
nothing.
Like a few, yeah,
but
maybe a thousand.
But also helping them getting reconditioned and
right.
that
and
help in hand.
Absolutely.
Right. The average offender is having an issue because they didn't know how to get there.
Absolutely. Okay. And what's great also is that Detroit Action Commonwealth, mm-hmm. they surveyed their members, right? And they said, what are the biggest impediments that you have mm-hmm. to being able to get back to success in your life?
Mm-hmm.
And the number one impediment that they identified was parking tickets.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
The second thing they identified was the traffic tickets.
Mm.
So that's why when we were forming, I went over to the parking department and I got the then director, Dr. Shawnee DeBerry. I was like, sister,
okay.
I need you to come on board.
Right.
And she did. And we've been very pleased and
okay.
honored to have that continue with the current director.
Mm-hmm.
And they then, like, they will take them and give them offers that none of us in here could ever get.
Right.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, like, let's say the person had tow charges
mm-hmm.
and late fees and penalties and interest and, you know, the original fine.
Mm-hmm.
They'll take them all the way back to the original fine. The only thing they don't waive in terms of extra fees would be tow fees because they got to pay the towing company.
Right.
Mm.
But they will take them back to the original fine and then they'll stretch them out like a whole year Let them pay like $5, $10 a month.
Wow.
So because they recognize the person's getting back on their feet.
Right. Right. That's
beautiful. So it really is a holistic approach. And then the best next part is once they get the relief from me in terms of the parking department and 36 sister court tickets, then they get to go forward and talk to one of our pro bono partners, and that's Bodman Law Firm. Bodman will then walk them in and help them to deal with anything civil they have. If they got credit card companies calling them, car companies calling, where's my money?
Right.
Right. They get a complete fresh start. And that's why you see the type
of
numbers.
Yes.
That's a success.
Sure.
You know, and so, and they're just, they work hard on themselves. We really just open the door, you know, and
well,
we support them in
you.
That.
I appreciate you. Thank you. That's awesome.
Yeah, that is.
So awesome. For to those, God be the glory. You know?
Absolutely.
For those people watching who might know somebody who needs this or somebody who actually needs, how do they get involved in the program? What are the steps?
I'm going to look straight at the camera because I want people to hear what I'm about to say very clearly and believe what I'm about to say. Our people walk in with warrants for their arrest. They walk right back out the door with a referral form. I'm not there to be the police. Mm. I'm there to be the judge to serve my community. They'll get a referral form from me. They can get one from any of the other judges. If they're in the courtroom and they know that they have a problem with homelessness, just tell the judge, I would like to be referred to Street Outreach Court, Detroit. If you don't feel safe to come in the court, you don't know me, so you don't believe me, you're not sure. Zen is telling you I'm the truth, but you don't believe it.
The greatest judge in the world.
Bless you. Then you don't have to believe it, though. You can walk in Capuchin Soup Kitchen. You can walk in St. Leo Soup Kitchen. You can walk in Share House. You can walk in Volunteers of America, Southwest Detroit Economic Solutions, any of them. There are partners. They will be able to help you to get into the program and get started. Mm. And I guarantee you, if you put the effort in, you'll come out the other side a way, 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 way better human being, more
That's
fulfilled
right.
human being, and ready to take on your life again.
That's what's up.
So all my brothers living on your sister's couches, your girlfriend's couches.
Sisters living on folks' couches.
Let's get this together. Get this together. It's an opportunity to give yourself a clean slate.
Yeah.
So
you know, Brother Zim, before we move on, just
please.
1 second, I just want to add quickly that a lot of people have a perception that homeless people are almost all brothers who are some kind of addiction going on and blah, blah, blah. That is so not true. I had a woman who was at the time a pastor's wife, who was a victim of domestic violence, ran out her house with the clothes on her back, keys to the car, and her purse, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And she ended up in our program. She had to drop out. She was in a master's program. She had to drop out of her master's program. The car got repo because, of course, he told the company to come get it, and on and on and on. And by the time she got to us, she was living in a shelter, living under bridges, everything.
Mm-hmm.
This was a woman who was pretty, you know, well-to-do woman before all this happened.
Was on track.
And she's great now, you know. We had an 18-year-old male who aged out of foster care. He just didn't have any family.
Lost.
He had nowhere else to go. And he ended up on the streets and sleeping in shelters and sleeping under bridges and all the rest. And that guy is a trucker now, you know.
Okay.
So we've had whole families come through.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a woman come through and then bring her brother back, you know. So it manifests in a lot of different ways, and all are welcome. And that's what I want people to know.
I think that's very good. I think that's what we need to know. And even the term homeless, because when we hear that, we automatically think living under bridges.
Yeah.
Just not having a place to call home.
That's really what it may be. That's right.
And a lot of people are out there in that situation. So, again, we commend you.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
I can't take the credit by myself. It's the whole team and truly God definitely helping
definitely.
Us.
That's what's up.
Definitely.
So thank you so much.
So I'm a Law and Order fan, right? You know, that's like me and my daughter's thing. We watch. And, you know, I always fancied that I would have been a great, you know, attorney or a lawyer. That's in my mind. I tell myself that.
I'm sure you would have.
Sure.
I'm sorry, where's our lawyer right now?
Oh, Morgan.
Ah.
Yeah, that's my daughter. That's what I'm prepping her to go that way. She's right out there. I wanted to ask you, you know, what is the best thing about being a judge? And then I'm going to ask you, what is the worst thing about being a judge?
Wow. The best thing about being a judge, I you know, it's kind of funny. After 13 years, I'm not at all jaded. I still love my job. I guess you can That's tell because I just light up when I talk about
it.
I like to go to work because I like to be of service. I like to help. When I can sit there and I have the ability to decide that this person's going to go to jail, this person's going to have to be evicted, this person's going to have to owe this money, whatever type of case I'm hearing at that moment, or I can fashion something to help them to get back to a better place or get in a different direction. Mm-hmm. Maybe I can say something, you know, on the felonies, I don't sentence on those. So the most I can do is maybe say something that might inspire somebody, but I can help people to see the potential in their lives and maybe help them to get on that right track. And in this job, I've been able to do, some things that I wouldn't have been able to do otherwise. I had a gentleman, I'll just give you one example. He was 60 years old. He was in front of me on his third retail theft case. He had each time gone to jail or probation or something, and they were now recommending that I send him to jail. And I looked at the recommendation, and I looked at his history, and I saw that he had these prior retail thefts. And each time, it looked like he was just stealing enough to survive. It really wasn't like he was trying to be a big-time thief or, you know, anything like that. And so I talked to him, and I said, well, you know, you're in front of a person who's going to have a totally different approach to your situation today. And the more I talked, the more he gripped the podium because he was getting madder and madder. Because I told him, I said, you're not going to jail today. What you're going to do is you're going to report to probation and you're going to be under probation for a year. And during that time, you have to go to Michigan Works for employment. You have to go here for housing. You have to go here for da da da. You got to go this or get to get clean and sober. But and then I told him, you have to report back to me, you know, every 3 months so I can see what's going on. At the 3 month mark, he was still a little salty with me. At the 6 month mark, he was a completely transformed person and literally cried in my courtroom.
Oh, wow.
Telling me, he said, Judge, I don't know that this was in my records or whatever, but let me tell you, I was an addict and not sober in any way for 20 something years. I've been homeless for over 20 something years. I now have a job. I now have housing. I'm clean and sober. And I thank you because you let me think that you believed in me. And I said, I do.
Right.
I believe in all of us and our human potential. And that's what I love about being a judge is just being able to put people in that spot. Now, they don't necessarily seize the moment all the time, but I more often than not, they do. What I don't like about it is that sometimes the cases are extraordinarily heartbreaking. What we have to do, you know, I have to follow the law as it is and not as I might want it to be. And so especially on the landlord-tenant docket, I was on that docket for 3.5 years up until this past October 1st when I moved to felonies. And on that docket particularly, there were so many heartbreaking situations where people are living in just horrific conditions, and I'm one of these folks who have I've literally gone out to see these houses. Like when I have a landlord saying, oh, it's this way. And I got the tenant saying, oh, it's this way. And I'm sitting there going, I don't really know which one you ought to believe. I will set a date and go out to that property and look at it myself so I can be sure about what I'm dealing with. And I have seen some pretty awful things, both that the tenant has done and that the landlords have done. And those are the difficult things when I have to still do my job within the parameters of my job and it doesn't allow me to do what I might want to do in my heart, you know? And so that part's the frustrating part. And the only other thing that is frustrating for me as a judge is the muzzle on my mouth. You know, we had our first African-American president since I've been a judge. I couldn't speak up and say to anyone, vote for him. I couldn't walk door to door. I couldn't pass out his literature. I couldn't wear his T-shirts, his hats. I couldn't do anything other than give him some money, which I did. We had the first woman run of a major party, at least, you know, Hillary Clinton. Same thing. I was constrained. We now have.
Why is that? Why do they have y'all constrained? Well, y'all can't say that.
Judges, because it's perceived that we may influence others because of our stature and our prestige of our office, that I might just make everybody go do what I say because I'm Judge Miller, right? And so, and I don't know how true or not true that is. I don't think it's as true now as it it sure was in the past. Mm-hmm. I don't see that happening like it used to probably back in the day, especially in a profession that's so dogged out now. We got these TV judges, and no disrespect to my colleagues, but man, I don't have any respect for any of them, quite frankly.
Really?
I mean, I respect their intellect. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. some crap to me. I could, if I talk to people like that in my courtroom every day, I wouldn't get reelected.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or at least I wouldn't deserve to be reelected.
Sure.
You know? Because I should not be disrespectful to people and rude to people. And I don't respect that. You know, I don't expect anyone to talk to me like that. And I think the way they talk to people is pretty reprehensible, frankly.
All right.
You know.
Yeah, that's okay.
That's how I feel about it, truthfully. So, mm-hmm. you know, but that part of it, those two aspects are the challenging things for me. So, but that's okay. They don't keep me from doing what I love.
There you go.
Important thing.
What was your inspiration? What made you, make this choice to go into this field and be this
awesome judge?
I think I have an idea, but I want to hear you say.
Well, I think you probably will know because you're my Facebook friend and other social media. So, you know, my parents are everything to me. My dad died, unfortunately, July 29th, 2014. But his impact, thank you. His impact on my life is everlasting. Sure. And my mother is blessedly still with me, and she is everything. They're everything to me. They were the first black couple to graduate from the University of Arkansas's law school. My mother is the first black woman lawyer in the history of Arkansas.
Oh, wow. Mm.
And so at 9 years old, looking at them and my uncle, my dad's, he's actually his first cousin. My dad was an only child. And so his first cousins were all his brothers and sisters. That's just the way they grew up. And so his brother, my uncle, was a doctor. So at 9, I told my parents, I want to be a doctor or lawyer. Because in my worldview, these were the people that most help folks, you know, and this is what I was seeing. And honors chemistry in high school changed my mind about that doctor thing quickly. I was like, nope. That won't be me.
Right.
And I told my sister, I was like, yeah, that's your lane and you go on ahead. So that's exactly what happened. She's a obstetrician gynecologist and I'm a judge now.
Powerful.
My parents were the first lawyers in either of their families, and then I became the first judge, and then my cousin is now a federal judge and is actually the chief judge of the Eastern District of Arkansas. So just in quick order there, we were able to move it along. And my grandfather always said every generation is supposed to improve upon the past one. So I keep telling my nephews and my cousin's children, okay, it's your turn now. You guys got to take this even further. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. So they're my inspiration, and that's definitely what made me do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, what is it about Detroit politics and, you know, being a judge in Detroit? What is about that inspires you or what, you know, makes you want to – because – and then when I say it, you smile. So obviously, I mean – you have a vision for us, so
I smile because I love the D. I love the D.
Okay.
This is a great city, and I moved downtown in. Well, I was born in Arkansas, so I'm not originally from here. But while my parents were in law school, we were here for 3 years. Then when they graduated, we went back down south. Then when they divorced, we came back up here. So my mom's from Michigan, my dad's from Arkansas, and they met at Michigan State.
Okay.
So that's the kind of backdrop. So I kind of am a Michigander and an Arkansan at the same time.
Okay.
But I love Detroit because it really is like a big country town. Everybody knows everybody.
For sure.
Everybody's in everybody's mix.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is a town, though, that also is very forward moving right now. I think we're on the right path, and I don't think that there's a lot of credit given to some of the people that had something to do with that, former mayors.
Kwame Kilpatrick.
And Coleman Young.
For sure.
And, you know, these are brothers who started putting us on that path to have 7 new hotels, 30-something new restaurants in the time that Mayor Kilpatrick was mayor. And you know, I'm not saying anything about anything else on that, but that was when we started seeing that turnaround and seeing the investment not just in downtown, but also in the communities.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's vital. And then that continued under other mayors, and now is continuing under Mayor Duggett. And I think it's great that we have congressional level leadership mm-hmm. who are ensuring that funds get back to the city now, mm-hmm. that we are able to see increasing development. Just looking at this building that we're mm-hmm. in today, there's so many new developments sure. and so many new mm-hmm. opportunities here. This also, though, is a city that has its problems. You know, we don't really talk about it a lot, but we have a lot of racial divide in this area.
Mm-hmm. Mosaic Ghetto area in the United States.
Yes, uh-huh. yes.
Not
yes.
Mississippi, yes. not Alabama, yes. but yes. right here.
And people don't want to talk about that's that, right? right? Mm-hmm. But that is the reality of it, you know. And so it kind of makes us a melting pot, mm-hmm. But it also has brought its challenges. And I like it, though. I like it because I try to reach out to every community. I try to make certain that I'm kind of everywhere. And you know that because, yeah,
sure.
I'm not one of these people who's only showing up when it's election time. I just got reelected in 2016. I'm not on the ballot again till 2022. So I'm good, but I'm still out here
right.
because I think that's what people want to see. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what my obligation is to
that's
my
right.
community. But I love this this city.
Hmm? People wants to connect with people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I don't think that people should just see a judge in a courtroom. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
You know, I just think that's wrong, frankly. But
Miller
I love...
for mayor 2021. You heard
sure.
it here first.
For sure.
Judge Miller for mayor 2021.
And then you'll be the first black mayor of Detroit.
The first black woman.
Woman mayor
of
Detroit.
That would be something.
Yeah.
Well, from
awesome.
Your lips to God's ears,
there
you
go.
Never know.
There you go. All right.
Yes.
So I just want the interview. That's all. I just want the first interview. That's, you know, one of the exclusive. No,
all sure. right. Well, if it happens, you got it.
There it is. There. And also, I want to say that she is a wonderful judge and a wonderful friend because I took on a project.
Yes.
A few years back, and we're doing it again. Operation Get Money, the legend of John Mickens Jr., and she plays the mean judge, which is so much out of her character in the opening scene of the television show. So, I mean, I went to her with this idea of her being in, and she, without any hesitation, jumped at the fact. So, I'm forever indebted. Forever
oh,
indebted.
It was fun. It yeah. was fun. And it was funny because my staff and all the, we had some of the attorneys and the staff and the officers yeah. around the court, they all got into it. They all got to sit and play audience members or something.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They were geeked. So, yeah, it was fun.
We're
going
to do it again.
It.
Yeah, we're going to do it again. We're going to do it perfect this time.
Let's make it happen.
That's what's up.
Let's
get
it. Yes.
Let's get it. So we got some things we're going to talk about. Anything else that you wanted to bring?
No, I don't want to occupy your whole show.
You can take the whole show. You can do your thing. We're just here. But we wanted just some current events, some situations going on. Our hot topic girl here.
No,
woman here.
Yes, I was about to
Mama
correct
Tom,
you, brother.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
She has some
Give
topics
woman
she
her do
wanted.
Now.
Oh, for sure.
You so what? Listen, we not starting because you finally decided to show up again, okay? Let's be nice to judges.
The judge here, y'all gonna act right because the judge here?
Accordingly.
So, hot topics. We touched on the R. Kelly thing, what, a couple shows ago. Anyways. Mm-hmm. So I was noticing, me and you were going back and forth in the debate, and we were talking about the downcline of his record sales and the whole deal. Well, to my knowledge of looking at TMZ and other stuff, he's going on tour again, and his sales have went up. And now you have these little girls claiming and hollering, take me in captive. Take me. I want mine. So
wow.
I'm just trying to figure out what's wrong? What's the mindset? What are we missing? It's not a joke. It's not a game.
You know what we're missing? I'm tell we missing.
Parents?
Kids are raising kids now. And everything is opportunist. And just like I said about the girls, what he did is not right. And I'm not holding them and
but
holding
it goes
them up.
On parents.
But you got to look at it like this. If you knew that this guy liked young girls, why would you put your daughters in harm's way? There's no way my daughter, I don't care how many songs he sings, how many hit records he got, you're not seeing my daughter by herself. She's not coming to your concert. She's not even going to listen to your music. But it's an opportunist. They see that, okay, he have a weakness. The mother see we can get money. There you go. And when they don't pay their parents anymore and the kids become of age, now it's rape.
That's a problem.
He molested my daughter. He did this to my daughter. And like with the ladies came out with the movie, the documentary. I would have been for it and supported them if they went to CNN. They went to reality TV, which is Lifetime. So that shows me this here. You're not trying to solve the problem. You're trying to get paid for the problem.
Even more so because they are now on tour as well. The the people who are considered the victims, they're going around. Yeah, I saw it. Facebook tells you the truth.
And, you know, it's the same thing that happened this weekend with Bow Wow. The girl beat Bow Wow up. All the guys, oh, man, he should have did this to her. No, he didn't. That was the smartest thing he ever did was stand his hands down. Because if he would have put his hands on her, it would have been a Chris Brown situation.
For sure.
And the little career that he did have would have been over. Mm-hmm. But now, by him being a man and saying, hey, I can beat you anytime, but I'm going to beat you mentally. You want to put your hands on me? I'm not even going to touch you. Get it off. Get everything you got on you that you mad at. Scratch me, bite me, kick me. Just don't kill me. I'm not going to put my hands on you. I'm going to keep my career going.
So I hadn't heard about that. Yeah, what happened with Bow Wow? Bow Wow.
Bow Wow was dating a girl.
Was it the reality TV show girl?
The girl that he went on boot camp. Back and forth.
Yeah, counseling. Right.
And I guess that they was behind TV was trying to make it work out.
Okay.
They went to his penthouse and they got into a fight. So when the police came, they arrested both of them because they didn't know who was the aggressor.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody was there saying, hey, he didn't even touch her. He just stood right there, letting her beat her up. She scratched them all up, beat them all up.
Oh, gosh. Mm.
And when they put the picture on, everybody,
clowned him.
Oh, he let the girl beat him up.
Mm.
But if he would have touched her.
For sure.
It would have been a whole situation like Chris Brown with Rihanna.
And you know, these situations are troubling to me. Mm-hmm. You know, truly, I have to weigh in here because the whole R. Kelly situation, like I don't in any way condone anything that he's done, if he did anything, to any of these women. There's a lot of them that are saying things I don't know. And at the end of the day, the man has walked out of two courtrooms. Now,
that's right.
You know, so you are innocent still in this country until you've been proven innocent. And sadly, that is a right of ours that seems to have faded away with the advent of social media and these fast news cycles that just convict a person simply because someone said something.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that someone said something about you doesn't necessarily make it true.
Right.
But with that said, I totally agree with you that at the end of the day, if you're my daughter, you are nowhere near an R. Kelly. I'm not leaving you with R. Kelly, Michael Jackson, any of these type
of
people.
Right.
I'm not leaving my child with some person in that situation when the child is just a child. And I am ultimately responsible for that person.
Exactly.
And I will tell you, my dad, we owned a club down south in Memphis. And when we had a lot of different rap acts come through the club, and I'll never forget when Digital Underground came, and this was before Tupac became huge. Tupac was just touring with them and doing different stuff with them. But Digital Underground at the time was huge, and parents, women, were lined up at the door with their young girls to meet these guys.
Mm.
And I'll never forget it because contrary to some of the other acts who shall remain nameless, those guys, to a person, all the way, every last one of them was like, your kid is like 14. Well, how old is she? Isn't she like 14? What are you doing?
Right.
I mean, you know, so they push back on these mothers, and I'll give those brothers credit till I die because of that.
Wow.
But guess how many probably don't and don't today.
You know, people judge, you know, people sell their kids for the highest bidder. And I told Zen this, I think I told
you. Money excites people.
You know, I remember one time R. Kelly would come here and Leah and mama and them stayed in Sherwood for us. Me and Leah's mother and father was good friends.
Mm-hmm.
R. Kelly used to sleep in a Leah room on the floor. And I asked Mike, which was Leah's daddy, rest his soul, hey, man, he got money. What are you doing sleeping in a bedroom floor with your daughter?
Mm.
But he didn't have a voice because Diane had all the money. He was working at a shelter, so he really didn't have a say so.
Mm.
Even though that was his daughter, right there to me said, "Well, you giving him the right to your daughter."
Yeah. So again, what you just said, money is everybody's out to try to find a dollar, and unfortunately, children are used as pawns. I can't understand it. Being the father of two children, I couldn't see me doing that, but again, some people would take the money over everything. So we got to, you know,
But let me tell you, it's even bigger than that, Zen, because okay. it's definitely money for sure when mm-hmm. it comes to people like the R. Kellys of the world. Mm-hmm. But you've got a whole branch of folk out here who are getting child brides. Mm-hmm. If you just Google child mm-hmm. brides yeah, America, mm-hmm. you will true. See a horde of documentaries mm-hmm. and all kinds of different things. And I teach at Baker College, and I have my students in my humanities class. I teach philosophy of ethics, and I have okay. them every time watch these videos, or at least one of these videos about child brides, and talk to them about the ethics involved. Because what you're talking about is parents mm-hmm. giving permission mm-hmm. to some grown butt man, mm-hmm. blank, blank, blank man, mm-hmm. who is now marrying mm-hmm. with permission of the parents.
Yeah, but this has been going on for a long time.
Yes, though. A 12, 13, 14, yeah. 15-year-old girl. Mm-hmm. And this is perfectly legal in the United States, mm-hmm. and yes. that is a problem.
That yes, is a problem.
It should not be legal. It should not be allowed. How in the world can we say that in the Romeo and Juliet situation, you're 17, I'm 14, I'm 15, we're right. in high school together, you're going to get a statutory rape charge right. if we sleep together, even if it's consensual, mm-hmm. even sure. if our parents know, even if they support it, all of that, you can still get charged. You'll be a sex offender on the list for the that's rest right. of your rest life. Of your but life. At the same time, if you have sufficient means, money, and access, whatever, you can come to my family and basically buy me mm-hmm. as your child bride and be 60-something years old.
That's ridiculous.
And I can be 12, that's and that's ridiculous. Perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm. That's ridiculous.
What parents should not be allowed
to do that
mm-hmm. period. And the culture has to change. There's a couple of things going on to me. One is the money, mm-hmm. but the other is the mindset that sure. is okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's not okay. And I get it. Some families are very, you know, poor and impoverished and challenged. And the part of this is driven by money for them too.
Right.
You know, because this man says, well, I'll give you $10,000 if you let me marry your daughter. Mm. And they just go, well, little girl, you got to go.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
but it's horrifying. It's horrifying.
Without question, very much
it
so.
It should not be happening.
Some weird discrepancies. But the other hot topic was the, was it B. Smith?
B. Smith, we're
talking
yeah.
about?
Yeah.
With her suffering with the Alzheimer's and her yes. husband going on the news now, just broadcasting that his girlfriend, he said that going through, him and his wife are a package. And by her suffering with Alzheimer's, it was becoming fatal to him. He felt himself going down and he just needed to live again. So his way of living was to start dating. But when he started dating, now he has a woman of another race, another color to now move in. And he's on the news like, this is my girlfriend. Okay. And he's making it public. So everybody's going back and forth about it because the problem is if you were going to have a girlfriend, then do it. Be quiet with it. But don't go on the news and TV and talk shows with your girlfriend and bring her in the house and say, so hey, we're a family. We're taking care.
She was actually, was she the nurse or something?
She was not the nurse.
Oh, she was
They tried to highlight it like that, but she is not the nurse.
He went and got her.
So now they're making business deals together. And then when they put her on, she's like, oh, yeah, well, I couldn't imagine a day without being around B. You know, we're family.
Okay.
But, yeah, so.
And
he catching her when her mind clicking in and out, which is wrong.
Mm. And that's what the problem is. So there's a big, big, big issue on a lot of the shows.
That's dead wrong.
Well, that's pretty bad. That's pretty bad. That's wild. We got our time. Our time is up, y'all. It was, you know, when you have a good conversation, good conversation with good people, time flies. We only got an hour show, but I want to thank you.
Thank you so much for coming.
And sorry for being late.
Yeah, and we would like to have you back, you know, whenever you have some new initiatives or things to talk about. That would be great.
Anytime.
I really enjoyed you.
Thank you.
I really did.
And I just want to remind people, you can walk in any day and you can see Judge Miller. I'll write you a referral form. You can visit our website, streetdemocracy.org/SOCD, to learn more information about Street Outreach Court Detroit. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, that's it. Flavor Show, another week. We'll see you next week. Peace.